All right, guys, I think we'll start. We've got, I think, a full docket today. I know more people are still coming in, but that is absolutely fine. First of all, thank you all. Welcome, and thank you all for attending today's Zoom roundtable. This, I think, is our fourth or fifth one, so we're finally starting to get the hang of it, but it's been fascinating. We welcome all current KISSA members, both skiers, suppliers, and others. So we're glad that you all are here. Want to just kind of remind everyone that this situation we're in is incredibly fluid. I would say more so now than it was even last week, with back to school approaching quickly. And certainly I'm kind of thinking that that's going to be very interesting in many ways. So this is a great opportunity for us to share all sorts of ideas. So I appreciate you all checking in. There is a chat button down below. Feel free to use it. You know, always interested in what people have to say, and we will hopefully get into some form of a Q&A towards the end. Please keep your mic muted unless you're talking. That generally helps to keep the background noise out. And let's see. I think this whole COVID situation is an opportunity for all of us to rethink kind of what we're doing in so many ways. It's forcing our hand for sure, but it's also an opportunity to think outside of the box. I had the opportunity to be on an Alpine call earlier this week and was really fascinated with some of the thoughts and things that they are doing. So I think that's an opportunity for us to keep in mind, like, what can we do that is different, but also super, super important. And I'd also caution us to remember that we are different than Alpine. I know they're talking about what capacity they're going to be able to operate. We don't have chairlifts. We're different in so many ways. We don't have that big lodge. I think we really need to look at how can we accommodate the uptick in potential skiers that we feel are coming. And so as you think of what you're doing and anything that you do, I urge you to bear in mind, don't look at reducing capacity. Look at your ability to change your systems to increase capacity. I know many of us operate financially, you know, close to that line of breaking even. So anything you can do to make more money is a great thing. Anything you can do to reduce losing money is a better thing. So keep that in mind. Our topic today is retail operations. And one thing to keep in mind when we talk about this is many of you in our other calls had mentioned the importance of having your customer in your shop so that they can buy those add-on sales. I know several of our ski areas make a tremendous amount of revenue through gloves and hats. So as we talk about limited entry or any of those things, keep in mind the ability to get that person in your shop. Our panel today is Nick Mahood, Nordic Director from Woodstock Nordic Center. We are honored to have Polly Tucker, also Fisher Swick's rep from Colorado, and Lauren Stagnetti, Nordic Director from Trapp Family Lodge. There are several others that are on the call that we will be calling on for important information, so we have a slightly smaller panel. I'm going to start with Nick today. Nick, you've been open for summer rentals as well as retail sales in your new activity center. Can you share any learnings specifically on the retail side of how you've handled that so far this year and learnings towards what you're going to implement for next year?
Sure. So we opened on July 1st for bike rentals and small sort of incremental add-on on retail. Food, bars, drinks, sunglasses, sundries, not a big retail operation yet. But I mean, I guess what I would say is it's kind of business as usual other than wearing a mask. We're fortunate where we are now. It's obviously different than what it would be like in the winter. It's open on both ends, so it's kind of open air space. The inn is at 50% capacity, so, you know, we're not seeing the same type of traffic through the space that we might in the winter. But I guess, you know, the way that I'm looking at this is, I think our concerns in the winter are going to be, you know, being able to move the number of people through the space that we need to do the same volume of retail sales that we've done in the past. And I think that that's going to be our biggest issue. The customer to customer interaction is not going to be as big of a deal.
Are there any specific learnings from what you've, you know, your operations this summer that you're taking in terms of crowd flow, or is it such a different space it doesn't really relate?
Well, no, I mean, I think that, you know, our hope is to use that space as an add-on to our Nordic Center, so that we will we'll be running some of our rentals, some of our retail, some of our ticket sales out of that space as well, in an effort to try to you know, just have people spread out, because it you know, it definitely is a concern. But no, I mean, I guess the takeaway is I don't see that the retail piece is really going to be that big of a deal, other than you need to have the space to have people in there and to run them through, you know, 100 through in an hour on a Saturday morning.
Right. Okay. I'm going to go to Lauren next. So Lauren, you have quite a robust retail operation in your Nordic Center. How has that been going so far this summer? And what are you learning that you can take into next winter?
It's been sort of slow, but it's starting to pick up a little bit. As a surprise, talking about what Nick was saying about crowd control, it's been very calm. The encounters have been calm. But today, just out of the blue, we had 50 people show up within 25 minutes for our history tour. And I found myself, and I'm doing a lot of retail now because we're very short staffed, we just have a smaller staff. And I had to literally tell people, you folks need to like spread out, and some of you need to go outside. And all of a sudden, I never had to do that before, but I had to sort of be a COVID police person, because they were just all over the place in our space. But we have the downstairs is where our ski shop is. The upstairs is retail, but we are going to find, and we have the yurt and then outside. So with those four areas, we have to find the best flow to get people in, get them signed up, get them boots, skis, and poles, and get them out the door. So right now, that's what we're really working on, is thinking about the best flow. And frankly, I think it's a good idea to have some of the rental upstairs, because it will bring them to the retail. Like, there are people that come downstairs in the winter and then go out and never go upstairs. So with some of our rental upstairs, the opportunity might be there to sell more stuff, more gear.
Have you done anything to that upstairs retail space to create more space? I know, I think on one of the previous calls, you mentioned something about removing some of the indoor seating there to be able to expand. Yeah. Is that something that you've done?
Well, we've got our bikes over there now, but and we've moved some of the racks so that it helps get people in and around. It is still a little bit tight, so we have to keep an eye on the amount of people. But this winter, we may not have the tables up there for people to, you know, hang out and have their lunch. They may have to do some of that in the yurt, and hopefully that we'll be able to use that space for some of the rental. Maybe have some, you know, I'm not sure yet, maybe put some skis up there, poles in the yurt, or just have a slow flow into the basement and out. But I think it could be an opportunity to see what it's like to do some rentals upstairs, maybe if just for a year. But okay. We do have some nice, I was looking at the space today, and it's actually, if you take everything out, it's really a beautiful space. The view is just drop dead gorgeous. So I know my staff would be happy to take a look at the view a little bit more than being in the basement, but it'll be a little bit of everything, I think.
Right, right. I'm going to move now to Polly, who comes at it from a different side. So Polly is a Swix and Fisher rep in Colorado and I guess the rest of the Rocky Mountains, I'm assuming, Polly. And I know you and I had the opportunity to catch up last week, and you were able to share a lot of stories from the many of the retailers that you've been talking to over the course of the summer. I know we do have Paul Perley from Ute Mountaineer on, and I will call on him for some info in a little bit. But Polly, can you share with us what you've learned from the variety of retailers that you've been talking to in Colorado? And also, I believe Colorado has some restrictions on opening. Before you can open, you must file some form of a plan with the state. So anything you know about that?
Okay, thank you. I've just been talking to the, first of all, the Nordic climate is very positive. I think we all believe the outdoors will be open for business, and we may see an increase in traffic, particularly new people to the sport. So I have had retailers, you know, the challenge is making room, you know, creating the flow of rental and traffic without sacrificing some retail profitability. So I've had some retailers coming up with fairly creative ideas. One of them was looking into a pager system like the restaurants use, where the, if the family does have to wait for a few minutes, they don't anticipate the waits to be long, but to get their rental gear or sign up for their lesson, that they can have a pager system and exit the building. And then they would maybe have heaters and tents up. So they're having to make more of the outdoor space work for social distancing. That's one example. Or, you know, having the upstairs and downstairs, that's ideal. But I think that, you know, people are also offering curbside pickup for either for retail items or rental items and online reservations. And I think you guys talked about that. I think what's going to be really important so that the space can be utilized and is to do a lot of planning and communication in advance. So we're trying to help our shops. For example, some of these people are brand new. They don't know how to dress. They don't know what are the important things before they go out to their, you know, on their tour. So we were trying to make a chart, for example, of Swix, of clothing and layering and that could be on the website. First of all, I think putting as much on your website as you can so that people, even a how to wax with liquid wax and how to layer maybe a little tiny snip on skate skiing or Nordic skiing. Cause I think we're going to be seeing people who maybe they rented a paddle board, stand up paddling. They tried it for the first time this summer. They loved it. So now they're going to say, what can I do this winter? That's a fun activity that I know nothing about. And so having in the retail side, silent salesmen for key items, you know, like, you know, for either hats or gloves, having people understand the weight, the proper weight for what they're going to do. That way the staff doesn't have to be talking as long to the consumer. The consumer's getting the product information from, you know, either the website or sales, you know, signs, and the staff can be focused on trying to move people through with equipment. And I'm definitely hearing that a lot of shops believe that there is going to be a high demand for equipment. And we've gotten a lot of calls this fall to increase hard goods orders. And we have some dealers creating what we jokingly call COVID packages. So that's a basic, you know, classic or skate package that if the person enjoys their rental or their lesson, or they don't even want to have the rental or the lesson, but they want a budget-friendly, easy to learn on package, you have those options already there for them. They're not necessarily going through the entire ski selection like we used to. So there's some really basic packaging ideas that people have been doing. One other thing that I think could be good is if you could get your guests to leave a review on TripAdvisor after their experience, to cite that you were, you know, a COVID-friendly operation and you had this great experience, and it's just awesome socially distant activity for families or newbies or whatever. And you could offer them, say, a hot chocolate on their next return if they show that they did a TripAdvisor, 10% discount on, you know, a pair of gloves or whatever. And also to make sure that local hotels and lodging know that you have a plan, know that you're operating safely, know that you've got all these great activities, in, you know, including fat biking, snowshoeing, that they are aware of the various activities. Because if they go, I'm hearing that some alpine areas are going to possibly operate their passes on a lottery. So someday some person might wake up thinking they were going to alpine ski. Now they can't. Okay, what else can we do? So if the hotel concierges and desk staff, you know what your place is bringing to the table, then you may be able to get some business that way. And we ultimately, I think we're going to be introducing new people to the sport, And so we have to sort of think, if you didn't know, if you didn't know anything, what would you want to know to show up at, you know, your Nordic Center or resort and have a great experience? And definitely focusing for sure, stocking up on essentials. You may not have carried hand warmers before. I would highly recommend carrying hand and toe warmers, because people might have to stand outside longer than they have. And obviously gloves and sunscreen. But just what are some other accessories you might need? Masks, you know, or buffs. There's a lot of cool logoed buff options that maybe you want to try some marketing so that you have those in your store as well.
Molly, I do want to come back to a couple of things you mentioned, but without sharing any proprietary information, anything confidential, what have you seen with orders that were booked in spring? Are they still there? And more importantly, what do you think the reorder capabilities of not only your two companies, but more so the industry in general? I'm not looking for anything specific to Swixx or Fisher, but what are you hearing about those reorder opportunities, and what does a retailer need to know kind of now or in the next month or so that they are stocked as they feel they need to be coming into winter?
Well, my companies did not cut back on production really. They, you know, and our orders came in good, above last year. And I have received almost no cancellations, and I have actually had people adding to their orders in anticipation of more activity. I think that there will be decent availability, you know, I mean, but I am hearing, I think that there's a possibility. Some of these places are bike shops, and we all know that bikes, the demand far exceeded the availability. And so there was panic. There's a little bit of a panic. Like, I don't want people to get into panic buying for Nordic, but I have had bike shops have been burned now. So they said, they are asking, hey, what should I do? And I just, if you think you're low on inventory, I would beef up or get a second ship. So you can always add a second ship with companies that's later down the line, like December 1, I think is Fisher's last ship, but for Swixx, you could write a January 15th order for hats and gloves, and it just, and you can say call before ship. Almost every company will allow a call before ship, and then they can't release it without talking to you, and then you're protected because you have the inventory if you need it. But if there's a shutdown, then you don't take that order on January 15th. But you know, maybe especially in all your key items, get a backup order in the system to protect you.
Is there a time, I'm just thinking, with cycling being as successful as it was, there's a high likelihood that those cross-country shops that are also cycling shops could be flush with cash and be in a pretty good financial situation coming into the winter season. I'm just wondering, like, for your average shop, is there going to be availability? And if so, if they've got a preseason book now and they want to add to it, when would they have to add to it roughly, so that it doesn't just become a ordering out of whatever restock you guys have, you know, that you normally have, so that I'm assuming will run out as soon as it runs out and then it's done.
Yeah, I mean, the availability is, the availability is the availability. So it's hard to say. It's sort of a first come, first serve. You don't know how much that will be reduced. When we see trends, like if we saw a bunch of people, as I just had, you know, four shops this week add to their order, if we start to see a trend, then, you know, my bosses go back to the European companies and find out where are they, you know, how's their inventory position, because we are subject to whatever, you know, Austria and Norway decided to do for inventory experiencing the same pandemic. So if we see trends, then we will try to, as a US company, we'll try to buy up more if we can. And if our parent companies stocked up, it's so depending on, you know, So I don't know how fast things could run out. I think we all felt that we were in pretty good inventory positions. And recently we've started to see an increase in people calling and asking just these questions. And so now I think that's going to be a good Nordic season and suppliers are going to run out.
And certainly I'm hearing, you know, pretty much what you're saying from all the suppliers that I've spoken to and the many other reps that I've spoken to. Let's go back and look at some of those, the challenges facing some of our retail shops. And the first one is traffic in the store. And that could be, there could be mandated numbers of people based on your square footage. How has, I guess I'd look to Lauren, have you, judging by what happened today, which doesn't give you much time to think about it, but what are your thoughts on how you're going to handle that, say, Saturday morning flow in your location, not including rental? I'm just thinking, you know, more your retail.
Yeah, well, during like busy holidays, Christmas, things like that, we often have a very long line, and sometimes it'll wind out the door or towards the bathrooms. And so with retail being upstairs, this would be a brand new problem. So I don't know how far down the stairs we could, you know, if you have to have a social distance, you can't really have them lining up much. We could say, come on outside, check out the yurt. Maybe it's a question that has to be answered. I'm not really sure yet. We tend not to get overly crowded in the retail area. It seems to be a pretty good flow. It stays busy. But today was a tour at a specific time, and they were all late. But it would be down the stair outside in where the stairs are, or they'd have to be outside. We could perhaps say go in the yurt if it's not crowded in the yurt, warm up in there, and then come on in a few minutes, or we could, you know, figure out a way to buzz people in or something. But right now I don't have an answer for that.
Okay. I'd like to call on Paul Perley from Ute Mountaineer. Paul, I see you there. I don't know if you can speak from where you are, but you had some really interesting experiences from the summer. Certainly you're in Aspen. They were hit early. I believe things have tempered now, but you've had quite a bit of experience now with getting people in and out of your shop and restructuring your shop. Could you share a little bit of those experiences with us?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yep. Perfect.
Okay. So we opened on May 9th and, you know, everything was still evolving then. You know how the spring went with everything. Things changed on a daily basis. Whether it was a mandate from our state or our county or our city. So there's a lot of uncertainty. And so what we experienced initially was that, you know, people do want to come in the store. We operate an outdoor store. It's a very busy store, you know, a lot of backpacking, camping, that kind of stuff. Stuff that's in demand, like Nordic is going to be. But so the people that were coming are, you know, because they have to, we only allow a certain number of people in the store. We were starting with 15 people in the store, and we've actually brought that down to 10. And the reason is because those people that are coming in the store are new users, and they're very needy. They need attention, and they only want to come in once too. So they're coming in with a purpose. And so it put a lot of stress on our staff. And this is the point I'm getting at is you'd think with less people allowed in the store that our staff would be less stressed out. We had 5 to 7 staff members with 12 to 15 customers instead of 30 or 40 customers in the store. But there was a tremendous amount of stress for them, and it's all this underlying COVID stuff that you can't put a handle on. That they're just having a hard time with it, and they're as much as you tell them how to protect themselves, there's still this underlying fear that they're experiencing. So we actually reduced the number of people coming to the store. We only have 10 people coming to the store. our sales are not down. In fact, they were up in June, and this is like a dream world, 10 people in store and your sales are the same or better. July is about the same as last year. The other thing that helped them was to really be clear on what our expectations were for them and what, how many people are allowed in the store and having a system for allowing those people in the store, how we're going to sanitize product, how we're going to sanitize the store, what the schedule is. These were all, because things were changing so much, we never had something really firm on that. So we outlined exactly what needed to be done with product that was returned from customers versus product that was tried on from customers, so that they have a really, really clear expectation. And that helped a lot with their mental well-being, I think. The other thing was when it was really busy, we have to have somebody at the door, because people will try to get in. I think you guys, a lot of those businesses sound like they have bigger rushes of rentals than we possibly do at our Nordic Center. But you've got to you somehow limit the flow. And the weird thing that's been happening lately is that we had people at the door in the past, but now we just have a sign at the door and they don't enter. They're really cooperative. People are getting really good about, waiting till somebody says come in, or they see one person leave, then one person comes in. So they're kind of being trained to do this by just repetition from all the businesses that they're going in.
Paul, have you seen
that? Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, have you seen people alter their time coming to your store? So instead of hitting, I'm not sure your busy times are, but are people thinking about, okay, I don't want to get there right when they open, and I don't want to get there at lunchtime, so I'm going to go in some of those less, quote unquote, less desirable times?
Not so much. I think, well, we do have, we do have certain hours for before on on Tuesdays and Fridays where people at risk can come in early in the morning. But I do see more people coming in early. That's not necessarily has been a busy time in the past, but they are coming in right away because I do think they want to avoid that rush in the afternoon kind of thing. But doesn't seem like they're changing their habits that way so much. It might have been Polly that said, just really make it clear on your website, when the best time to come in for rentals is, when the best time for retail is to come in. We think about possibly doing a reservation time when you can come in. I think that'd be a pain. I don't know if that's going to work. I do like the pager idea, because I almost think we're going to have one party at a time doing rentals, and we'll just try to move them through as fast as possible. Or we'll have a separate room for boots and for skis kind of thing.
Right.
But I don't think they're changing their habits so much that way.
So several people have mentioned reducing the fixtures in store or reworking your store for flow. And Polly, I've talked to a lot of reps, and one of the things that I've been told, not by you yet, I don't think, but they're saying that a lot of their smaller stores, their retail sales of clothing are not as strong as they have been, but their hard goods sales are way up. And I asked them, I'm like, why is that? And they think some of that is going online. Have you seen any of that or heard from that? Anything like that from people?
I mean, I have heard people concerned that they won't be able to sell as much clothing. And also, I think, but I do think there is an opportunity. Anybody new probably doesn't have the right clothing for cross-country skiing. I mean, they might think they do, but the first time they go out with their heavier jacket on or what they think are snow pants, they will learn that that's ridiculous. So I think lots of people will get it online, but I do think like the destination traveler, they simply don't necessarily know what they need. And so I think there should be the ability to sell some clothing, but for sure we've seen a trend where there's been, people have added to their hard goods and either kept soft goods the same or lessened soft goods. But, you know, Paul can talk about their sanitizing when people try it on or how you're doing the zippers and where and how you're leaving it aside, Paul. I think people would love to hear how you're sanitizing your soft goods.
Yeah, we do have one question on that. Paul?
So for clothing, anything that's been tried on, we steam. We have a rolling rack and we steam everything. And then we'll, any hard objects like zippers, zipper pulls, that kind of stuff, we use gauze and alcohol. And we can get the stuff out pretty quickly back on the floor. That's how we sanitize with stuff. You know, we'll do that with packs as well. I think with skis, that kind of thing. We, you know, like if people are touching skis, we're probably not going to worry about that too much. We're going to have hand sanitizer around for that sort of thing. I think with rental skis, we're going to wipe everything down when they come back in. Boots, we actually have a spray for boots, for the inside of boots.
The EPA does have a list of approved disinfectants, and I will put that link on the notes for this call because it does tell you brand names and everything. Nick, going back to Polly's point about people walking in the shop without the proper clothing, I know retail has been pretty important to you, but do you see that, you know, I know you get a lot of first time people, they didn't know they were going to go cross country skiing and there they are in your operation. Is that something you've been able to take advantage of in the past and you think you will going forward?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think as you mentioned earlier, like the hats and gloves, it's a really easy to say, oh crap, I've got the wrong pair of gloves or I don't have a hat and to drop 40, 50 bucks on something like that. You know, people suffer through a little bit more with the wrong jacket or the wrong pants. I mean, I would say, you know, we traditionally, gloves, hats, and pants are what we sell the most of to people that aren't properly equipped when they come in the store. And then jackets are probably a distant fourth. I do think this year, though, there is a lot of opportunity to tap into people who are going to maybe go cross-country skiing more than once because it is the activity that they want to do in the winter now. You know, the ones that are out walking or the ones that are out rediscovered biking or rediscovered hiking or trail running or whatever, I think that those are going to convert to cross-country skiers, particularly where we are here. So I think that there will be an opportunity to tap into that new market and maybe even bundle things together, you know, a whole package of soft goods and hard goods for new skiers.
Right. So we've talked about what you do with clothing specifically that has been tried on. And generally it sounds like consensus is you take it out of circulation, you put it through whatever your cleaning plan is, you rest it and then you restock it. Paul, do you have a changing room in your Ute Mountaineer? And if so, what do you do with that?
Yeah, we have three changing rooms. Basically, we ask people to leave all try-on clothes in the changing room so we know that that stuff needs to go and be sanitized. I'm not sure how regularly they wipe down the changing room. I think we might fall a little short there, to be honest. It's probably not after every customer, but I think it couldn't hurt to do it after every customer to wipe the doorknobs, light switches, and seats in there. But I'm not sure actually how well we're doing that part of it.
Right.
And then returned clothes, by the way, we just, anything returned, we just leave for 3 days and then we put it back on the shelf.
So you do, you take it out of circulation for 3 days.
Yeah. Nobody, our staff just was not comfortable with it. And, you know, just for whatever reason, you can do the same sort of protocol you do on try-on clothes, but they feel icky with it. And right. It's, you got to keep this, you got to keep your staff comfortable. It's really important.
So staffing is going to be, I think, an issue coming up for this year. In talking to many of the ski areas, their plan was not to bring on additional staff this year, even though they thought there could be increases in the number of people at their ski areas. And that's, I guess there's probably no answer here, but what do you do if a staff member gets sick? If you're running kind of on your normal bare bones, what would you do if a staff member gets sick? And Richard Hodges, I'm going to call on you on this because you and I have had a few conversations about your staffing. I know you've got a pretty robust operation. Can you talk? I know you've got a plumber there also, if you can talk. have you thought that through, what your staffing will look like specifically for retail, and then what you will do if somebody does get COVID?
Oh, man, nightmare scenario. I'll start with the second one, because I think the goal here is to keep all the employees and all the staff safe and healthy. And, you know, the protocols, masks and gloves for everybody all the time. And if, you know, I don't know if we'll be taking temperatures, but that staff safety is the first thing, because you don't want to be, you know, the news story of the day saying, you know, 12 employees of Joe's grocery store came down with COVID. You know, you don't want to be that person. In regards to staffing, I'm just sitting here and, you know, managing the door, managing the retail space. I'll probably have extra people in. And also I'm looking at probably adding, the staff is with instructors and everything is, you know, 45 people, probably at least 5 more, primarily focused on retail and helping manage kind of rental flow and flow in the store, you know, kind of manage the doors and clean the counters kind of stuff. So I'm looking at, you know, not high dollar staff, but some additional people to give flexibility in case people can't come into work, and also to help manage the busy times. Yep. Been doing a couple walkthroughs of the retail space, and I think we're going to probably have more back stock and a little bit less selection on the floor, but back stock available immediately to just open up the space a little bit. And again, looking at kind of expanding outdoors with a, you know, an all-weather tent or yurt or something to help manage the rental side of things. But I think from a staffing standpoint, I'm going to be looking for a few more people.
Gotcha. Lauren, how about you up at Traps? What do you think you're looking at staffing? And again, specifically for retail, are you looking at same numbers and increase?
We have a pretty good core that come back every year. And fortunately for us, about everyone that works in retail understands a rental operation. So if we got stuck, they may not all instruct, but they could come down and help us. It looks like we'll have the same crew this year. So hopefully, you know, it would always be nice to have another person or two just like in the wings in case something happens. And our trail guys have come and stepped in. So I've been where we've been flat out, and a trail guy comes in, he gets behind the counter and starts helping us give out skis. So hopefully we won't come to that. I have to, you know, do that. But I think right now I feel fairly secure. We have like 4 core rental people with a lot of part-time people that help keep us going in the busy times. Right. But our retail crew is pretty much solid. It's 3 or 4 people that are always here. So knock wood.
Right.
We hope we don't have to do too much switching around, but if we have to, we have a little leeway. It depends on if it's an outbreak, then we're in big trouble.
Yep. And Nick, I'm going to throw the same question to you. I know a lot of, you know, much of your staff wears many hats. And I know, you know, generally in the midweek, you're pretty, you know, you're well staffed, but those peak areas, you're stretched a little thin. What are your thoughts on your staffing going forward?
I think we're going to have to bring on more. I think my concern is being able to find more. I mean, pretty much every year we hire everybody that applies. I mean, I do have some core staff now that has summer positions in the resort and will rotate back to the Nordic Center in the winter. But I'm concerned that if we need more staff, we're not going to be able to find more staff.
Yep. And you're tied to a larger ski area that, or a larger corporation that has a lot of staffing needs. So let's move now to kind of solutions to some of the issues we've talked about. And, you know, many of you, I think Polly and Paul both brought up messaging and, you know, kind of managing the expectations of your shoppers coming to your location. So I think we've talked a little bit about making sure that your website talks about what your new procedures are. It was very interesting. I thought that Paul said that people look at the sign and they know it applies to them, so they don't just barge in. They wait to be invited in. So interesting to see some of those people learning. Is anyone looking at advertising with some of this messaging? You know, how are you going to get that word out? And I don't know, Lauren, is that something you guys do? Like, will you have some form of an outreach about how people can approach your outdoor center, you know, be it for rentals or retail or in any use there?
That's something I'm going to strongly look into. On our main page of the Trap Family Lodge website, there's a COVID thing pops up in the beginning to just let people know that we're on board with, you know, best practices. And we certainly will. And for the people that have come in, 99% of them are just really good and really understanding, but they like to see the bottle of sanitizer and they like to see all the things we've been doing. But we do have to message out, and maybe, I don't know if we'll do Facebook or have our marketing guys, our sales guy, I don't know if Bob and Ben and those guys create something that we can put out, but I think it's a great idea because, thanks Polly, because, you know, it's good for people to, they will feel safe while they're driving up, you know, just knowing that we're taking that extra step to let people know. I think that's what we will do.
And we've talked about determining your capacity. I don't know if I'm here in Vermont. I don't know if Vermont has a capacity rule. Lauren, do you know, or Nick, do you know, Dewey, for your shop? Do you know what it is for your new activity center?
And do you know,
For the activity center, I don't, because it's open air. For the, it's 25% of your fire code, 10 people or a certain number per square foot, whichever is greater. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I know, like in the golf shop where the Nordic Center is in the winter, it's 15 people.
50, including staff. Okay.
Including
okay. So there is a capacity number, and then we've talked about controlling entry with a greeter, signage, potentially a greeter, potentially an intercom or that system that restaurants use. That sounds good. How many, you know, hand sanitizer stations? I must say, when I go to any establishment and they have that sanitizing station right when you walk in, I really like it. Has anyone used that so far? Is that something that you're using, I guess, Lauren or Nick?
At our desk right at retail, the first thing they'll see is they'll see the hand sanitizer right by the credit card machine. Yep. And we have wipes that we wipe the desk down and the machine's down, not like every single time a person's there, but the credit card machine gets wiped down quite a bit more. How about you, Nick?
Yeah. Nick, have you do something like that?
Yeah. I mean, we have hand sanitizers at both entrances, and then all the buildings on property have gotten at each entrance has a hand sanitizer. The main lobby of the resorts, as well as our athletic facility, have a temperature automated temp check when you walk in the building. so that people are getting, the guests are getting temped at least several times while they're on property.
And you said that's automatic. It's not somebody with a temp gun. It's built in.
No, it's like a silhouette of a person, and you stand in front of it, and it's got like a little video screen, and your face shows up on it, and you align yourself properly, and your temperature comes up.
Oh, interesting. I want to go back. So what about reservation systems? So for retail, as we've alluded to, you've got your person who kind of knows what they're looking for, and then you have that never ever person who's going to walk in and say, okay, I want to go do this sport. What next? What do I need? How do I do it? And so you've got two different customers, one that could get through your retail operation without a lot of help necessarily because they know what they're looking for. Yeah, I need a pair of gloves, or I'm looking for lip balm, or whatever it is. And then you have the person who walks in and doesn't know anything. Is anyone implementing a reservation system? And I'm also thinking for like boot fitting. I guess it's a little more specific in Alpine, but anyone looking at some of those, boot fitting and ski fitting that take a little more time, anyone considering a reservation system there? Nick, Lauren, or even Richard? Yeah, Lauren?
We have BRM, which is a bike rental management, which we're going to be using for online ski rentals. And I was just studying their platform today. So that we'll be able to get the person's size, their weight, and hopefully be able to, and their shoe size as well, and just hopefully be able to have some of that ready for them. At this point, that's the most that we have is the online, that for reservations. I don't know, like if we do a tent outside or something like that, we might be able to have some information for people while they wait to let them know. But these are all good questions and things that, hopefully next meeting I'll have a better answer for you. But, it's in the back of our heads because we can't, some people, these don't fit right. My big toe hurts. I need another pair of boots. So some people are fast. Some people need 5 try-ons before they get the boot that works. So it's tricky like that.
Right. And Paul, did you mention that you guys have not at Ute Mountaineer come up, you don't use a reservation system at all? You decided not to?
No, but I just from listening to you guys, I'm thinking about it for like AT, when we sell AT stuff. So that's going to be big this year, maybe doing some sort of, not a reservation so much, but a appointment based.
Right. Yeah. Right. I guess that's the word. Appointment.
I'm not sure. I would think about it for the Nordic Center too, and just having everything ready in the morning, so that we can process people quicker. At least the ski part of it.
Right. Right. I guess the issue with some of those never evers is, especially for Nick up in Woodstock, they probably don't even know they're going to go cross country skiing. So that day, yeah. So to make an appointment, they wouldn't have thought far enough ahead.
Reese, can I say something?
Yeah, please do.
Also, I think it would be worth reaching out to the various manufacturers to see what sort of tools they have that might be able to assist you. For example, Fisher has an app called ScanFit, which is a way to use your smartphone to scan your foot from various angles and instep height and all of that, to then make boot recommendations. It's used way more in Alpine. We're still trying to, see if it's properly flowing for Nordic, if we're on that right now. But the point is that there may be some manufacturers who have an app or size charts or things. You just really want to make sure you have all the tools from all the lines that you carry so that you can be as expeditious in your fitting as possible.
You beat me to that, Polly, because Steve mentioned that to me last week, so I was gonna ask you about it. I think also there's, separate from something as sophisticated as that, there are, I believe, a few manufacturers, and they may not be in the ski world, have some kind of thing you can print and step on to get a rough size, because some people have no idea what their shoe size is, especially if it's European. So something that at least gets you in the range, that would be helpful. What about, so we've, looking at that retail scenario, one of the, the buzzwords in all of this now is minimize contact and maximize safety. so much of retail is kind of hands-on. You got to touch and feel it. You got to try it on, all of those. If we look at, you know, kind of that minimize contact, maximize safety, I want to kind of talk through some of those elements. So we've talked about masks worn by everybody, not only staff, mask, gloves, and hand sanitizer used by everyone, including that person coming into your shop. I know Vermont now has all of Vermont has a mandatory mask rule out in public. So hopefully everybody will be coming in with that. What sort of dividers are people erecting? And, you know, you go to the supermarket now and they've got that, you know, they've got the sneeze guard, the post office. I know Keen Footwear has a freestanding sneeze guard boot fitting station that's kind of cool. I'll include a picture of that with the notes here, and that's something that you can easily build yourself. Is anyone else looking at kind of those barriers and what they're doing? And Paul, maybe, you know, do you have any barriers that you've created in your store now that you've been open for a while?
We have plexiglass at the front counter, and we used some old skis to kind of make it kind of cool looking. Uh-huh. As the frame. We have two of those Keen devices. And doesn't seem like our staff is that interested in using it. But I think the Nordic Center might be a little different. Other than that, we just have a line outside that we put cones every 7 feet or so that people can stand at the cones. So there's social distance. That's it for barriers.
Right.
So we actually cordon off our shoe area because it's a very busy place. We only allow 3 people in there at one time. So we actually have it's a gate basically to get in.
Do for your shoe and boot area, well, I guess it's your shoe area now and soon to be your boot area. Do you do anything special when you're handling a person's foot, so to speak, you know, anything? Are you not helping them get into a shoe? They do it themselves. You know, have you changed any of your protocol there?
Yeah, everyone has to use hand sanitizer before they touch our shoes in the shoe area. And we're not putting shoes on people. And then once they're done with it, the shoes get put aside to be sprayed. We do have relatively close interaction for brief periods, we're not touching anybody's shoes or feet.
Polly, you've worked enough retail operations where you're helping people get in and out of ski boots. What's the future of that for this coming year? I mean, you get that never ever in there, and the thing's got a zipper and maybe a Velcro strap and a couple laces and maybe a twisty thing. I mean, how that person doesn't know how to operate that thing. What do you do?
Well, I think like Richard was saying, I mean, I think you wear gloves for every person. So you're going to, not only are they hand sanitizing and you've hand sanitized and the boots on the wall, but you know, you're going to put gloves on and you're going to treat it like a doctor visit. You can ratchet all that stuff up, and then you're going to remove your gloves and toss them before you touch anything else after that fitting. I think in Nordic it's much easier because it's I think than Alpine. But hopefully with the help of the tools of either, you know, fit apps or whatever. But I think there has to be a certain amount of reality where you might have to touch a boot. But I think gloves are in play for one time use, and then they get thrown away.
Right.
One of the things that I was just going to mention, I was trying to think how it could apply to Nordic, but because we're talking about maximizing retail but minimizing contact, and we have, there's an Alpine franchise called Black Tie Ski Rental across the nation. Right. I deal with quite a few of them for Alpine. And I was trying to ask myself, what could be the reality, especially when Nordic centers are looking at, you've got to increase your staff, providing you can find them, increase your staff for these busy times, but then how do you keep everybody having a successful payroll? And is there any example or opportunity where there could be a delivery system? So one of these staff members, and again, when you're not during the busy times, but you basically commit to, if someone wants a rental package for the next day, you get your, you know, they have to have their rental order in by 2 o'clock or something, and you deliver these things. This works for small communities, you know, like resort communities. And is there any possibility or value in considering door-to-door delivery and to not miss any rentals? And this, think about the fact that this is probably an Alpine customer maybe who wants to try Nordic. They probably have good amount of money, because the delivery concept works in Alpine because these Gucci people want this stuff brought to them. So why wouldn't it be able to work in Nordic, providing you could figure out the right, you know, parameters?
My one thought there would be, and I'm I don't know if this is true, but I would guess many of your cross-country rental people rent because they haven't done it or barely done it, where many of your Alpine people don't want to fly with their equipment, so they're going to bring their boots, rent, but they know how it all goes together. And I know in talking with Nick from Woodstock and many, many of you, once you rent the gear, you then have to go outside with them and show them how to put the boot into the ski or put the strap on. So I just wonder about that with respect to the type of renter really being that person who doesn't quite know where to start, whereas your Alpine person has that knowledge of how it goes together and can figure it out. Yeah. But again, I'm speculating there. I think the last thing, we've touched on this with only a few minutes to go, is your sanitizing of products that are tried and not purchased or returned for restocking, that sort of thing. And it sounds like most people are in agreement. You disinfect it with whatever system you're using. And again, I will include the EPA's list of approved disinfectants. I know there's a variety of products, ozone, UV, steaming, it sounds like from what Paul uses, and a variety of other things that can also be employed. And then it sounds like there's a rest period for some of that equipment. I'd love to learn more about resting, because when we were talking about rentals and turning rentals, the goal is to get that stuff, you know, sanitized and out the door again, so that there's limited to no resting there. And that's still kind of out for debate, but I think we've got a pretty good disinfectant thing. All right, we're a minute to three, so I'd like to wrap this up. Thank you very much to everybody who attended. I will, as I said, do bullet points of this conversation with as many live links to any resources as possible. I urge any of you to continue to talk about this and let me know what you learn, what you think. I've had incredible conversations about rental this past week, as well as food service. That, you know, certainly on the rental, I want to circle back to that, because I think we touched on that probably a month and a half ago. I think we've learned a lot, or at least I have, in that amount of time. Through talking to many of you and many others, as well as listening to other industries. Food service we haven't tackled yet. I think our next two topics are going to be food service and messaging, which both I think are critical. And we'll continue the conversations. But again, please reach out to me with any thoughts, comments, ideas that you have, if we've missed anything. And with that, I'll wrap this up. Thanks to our panelists from today, and we'll be in touch.